VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome to the VanWee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3 The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Now here are your hosts of the VanWee Financial Hour, Stephen and Adam VanWee.
It's Saturday morning on the First Coast, although you might think you were in Wisconsin or someplace like that. It is so chilly out. It is absolutely wonderful. Please don't ever think I'm complaining when I say it's anything other than really too hot. Anyway, it's 10 o'clock. That means this has got to be the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here live in the studio as always. So if you have some questions that you would like to ask on air, all you got to do is pick up the phone, 904-222-8255. Easy to remember, 222-TALK. There's some people starting to come into town these days that we're having tournament week next week, and some people like to get a little head start and play a couple of the local golf courses. So you see a lot of out-of-state license plates this time of the year, and I just want to caution everybody that these people are coming in here to have fun, and they spend an inordinate amount of money on our local businesses. Give them some space on the road. They don't know exactly what they're doing. Let's all be careful and kind and not get into any panics, and we'll have another very successful tournament season. Everybody will be better off, including the real estate, because when people come down here and see what we've got, a lot of them want to live here.
I can't blame them.
I can't either. It's kind of what happened to us. 25 years ago next month, we will have moved here, and this is the best May 6th I've ever seen.
I would agree with that.
It is just so stunningly beautiful. Puts you in a good mood. So, we got a lot going on, as always. Welcome back to all the regulars, and for anybody who's driving by, whether you're from out of town or whatever, this is a live, in-the-studio financial program. Most of them are not live. Most of them, you are a captive audience, and you have to listen to what the host wants to say. But if you would rather control some of the editorial content, it is your right, and we will be pleased to hear from you callers. As always, go directly to the head of the line. So, investing, estate planning, taxes, just a few of the things that are going on right now. There's a lot to talk about, and a lot of it's kind of new. So if you have some questions, maybe we'll stimulate some. Maybe you have some now. Meanwhile, a funny thing happened in the market this week. After I woke up from the first two or three days of nothingness, we had a nice little bump on the back end of it, and we wound up breaking some big numbers again. And I wasn't at all sure that was going to happen.
Yeah, I wouldn't call what happened this week big numbers, but there were some good
numbers. It crossed some big numbers.
Yeah, that's true. The S&P set an all-time high, so that's always a good thing.
And it's about this close from another one with two zeros on the end.
Yep, that is true. And all the gains were under 1% in the U.S. this week. It's kind of been a trend, but the NASDAQ rose the most, just under 1%. The S&P rose about 0.6%, while the Dow lagged at 0.3%. That's kind of been the story of the markets recently. Mm-hmm. We saw gains out of technology, financial, and healthcare, while energy, consumer staples, and utilities all declined. So for the year, the Dow is up 6.3%, the S&P up 7.2%, and the NASDAQ is up 13.3%. However, if you happen to own QQQ, which is the 100 biggest stocks on the NASDAQ, you would have seen a gain of over 16% this year to date, which is pretty amazing.
Can we just call it off and take a vacation?
Well, you could sell if you're so inclined, but I don't know that I would do that.
Wouldn't recommend it. Remember, I'm the one that's still saying the Dow closed over 21. I think we're going to 22,000 this year. We'll see.
Yep, you've been saying it all year, so we'll see. So in kind of the opposite story, commodities did not have a very good week, with declines sort of across the board in gold, silver, and oil. It was a pretty rough week, although oil did rebound, had a nice rebound, yeah, actually, on Friday.
I needed that.
Yeah, the energy ETFs were up around 2%, and oil, USO, the one that tracks the price of oil, was up big as well. So who knows, maybe we've reached another little bottom. I happen to think that oil is still going to hit 60 at some point in the not so distant future, but I don't know that there's much upside beyond that.
Yeah, I'm kind of in agreement. The industry, especially in this country, has become so resilient. We can open drilling rigs onshore and offshore in nothing flat now. So a little response can create a lot more supply, and we've got the biggest supply right now we've had in a year, which is the cause of the current weakness. But it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. When you have too much, they shut them down. When you have too little, they put them back, and that's what keeps the price range trading.
Absolutely, and the part of the deal is that the energy independence for America is something we've been working on for decades, and we're pretty much almost there. But that's not necessarily a good thing for the price of oil, but while it is a good thing for America, it doesn't necessarily translate into a good deal for your investments in oil and energy-related stocks.
No, it does not. But not sending all that money overseas seems to me like the biggest slam dunk in history.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some benefit to that, but at the same time, just something to keep an eye on with your investments.
Absolutely. Well, we had jobs this week. What happened?
The jobs numbers were not spectacular, but not bad at all. They were right in the middle. And I talked about it a few weeks ago when I sort of went over what the jobs reports mean, but there's usually a lot of discrepancy between the ADP and the non-farms number, the government number. And this month there really wasn't. They were pretty close. So they were right in the middle of the range. I think 179 and 211.
Credibility was pretty high, I thought, on this report.
It did seem in line with what we were sort of looking for. So I think that the steady growth is here to stay, especially in the job market. And some of the payroll numbers were not as strong. The increases in salaries were not as good as the increase in jobs. But at the same time, the trend is still very positive.
Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of notable reports, and I thought one of them was the 4.4% unemployment rate. That was the reported number that actually I thought meant quite a bit. It's the lowest in about, what, 10 years?
Yeah, 10 years. And then also the initial and continuing jobless claims came in lower than expected as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. In fact, quite a bit. The thing that was not so widely reported, and one that I like to look at, is what they call U6 unemployment, where they bring in all the discouraged workers, people who have just been fed up trying to find a job. That number just a couple of years ago was in the 11-12 range percent-wise. It dropped 0.8% to 8.6%. And that number is much more meaningful to me than the U3 number, which is the one you hear on the news all the time, because it does get that underground group that would really like to go back to work. It also factors in people who are out of the workforce for the simple reason that they retired.
Yep, that is true. That's a big thing these days with over 10,000 baby boomers a day leaving the workforce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that leaves a lot of jobs open. In fact, if you think about it in just its raw terms, if 10,000 people a day reach an age where they're going to retire, which is probably a good approximation, then what's left out there is just a big gaping hole for bringing people in, which I would think might come out closer to zero. So when you have 211,000 on top of all the retirements, I think the number is pretty significant. It tells me we're on the right path. People are getting a lot happier about what's going on in Congress, even though it's ugly. You know, you never should watch law being made, and unfortunately the TV is carrying it all over the place. But we got step one done with the health care, and we'll talk a bit about that today for sure. And we also are going to go into tax reform, and I'm going to give you some opinions on tax reform as it's touted in the hallowed halls in Washington, D.C., and how crazy they are, and maybe they're crazy, maybe they're misleading. I contend it's probably both. After the break, we'll have a trivia question. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. Anything you want to talk about, we're fair game. So give us a call. Trivia questions sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. I'm going to talk about the dynamic nature of our country's economy. Companies come and go, mergers happen, things get obsolete, new things are invented, and it changes the landscape a bit, and nowhere possibly is that more evident than in the makeup of the S&P 500, which has selected, guess how many stocks to go into that index? 500?
Oh.
How about that? And it has stayed at 500 for quite some time, unlike the broader indices, which I'll talk about at a different time. So my question involves what happened over the last 10 years with the S&P. 10 years ago, there were 50 stocks that were in the, or excuse me, they were added in the past 10 years. There were 50 stocks that did not even exist as companies back 10 years ago. So those 50 came in and they're brand new, but they're big enough to be in the S&P 500. A lot of companies go the other direction. Things happen, they get merged out of business, or they go out of business, they become obsoleted or whatever. So my question is, how many stocks in the last 10 years don't exist today and are therefore out of the index?
Okay. Now, does this number include stocks that have declining revenue or market cap and fall out of the S&P 500?
It does not.
Okay.
The companies don't exist, although they could exist. They could exist as a different name, part of a bigger empire.
Right.
They don't keep tabs on that. So 50 were added. How many were just gone?
All right.
And you might argue in your head, well, it should be the same thing, shouldn't it? But it's not.
Nope, it is not.
Because there are other reasons for changes and dropping companies and so on. There are requirements to stay into the index, that sort of thing. But anyway, the question, I'll take it to the nearest four or five, and I'll even give you a break. I'll set the downside. It's more than 50. How's
right.
that?
Seems fair.
Okay. Reasonable.
What's that number to call in?
222-8255, 904-222-TALK. All right. Before we get into who we are, why don't you wrap up a little bit on the tail end of the jobs report and the market wrap?
Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about the earnings season, which is well underway now. 1,800 companies, more than 1,800, have now reported for the first quarter, and it looks like a pretty good quarter, I have to say.
It does indeed.
The earnings beat rate did drop a bit this week. It's down from 68% last week and sits at 64%. Still, you have to go back to 2011 to see a earnings beat rate higher than that, so pretty strong. However, that is not the good news. The good news is that the revenue beat rate stands at 65.3%. It's also the best rate since 2011. But that's not really why I think it's great news. What I think is great news about that is that we have been saying for at least 2 years that we need to see top-line revenue growth for companies, because during this recession and subsequent recovery, companies grew, but a lot of that was by cost cutting, by productivity improvement. It wasn't on sales growth. So if we can see some consistent sales growth in these companies, I think that is a true sign that we are definitely on the way to not only recovery, but setting new, justifying these all-time highs in the stock market.
And there's a couple of aspects in that measurement, too. Companies have had very little control over their pricing over the last 10 years since the Great Recession, and that I think there's a little bit more control of pricing so they can inch it up a little bit, which helps their revenue. But the number one revenue grower is new customers. New customers, by definition, have to be making some money or be wealthy already, but we have to add customers to the top line. That part is a lot harder than controlling the bottom line, which you can do through stock buybacks and things like that. That's called window dressing, or some people call it quality of earnings. Low quality earnings are from buybacks. Quality earnings start with the top line, and the top line is finally doing some good for everybody.
Yeah,
that's a good thing.
We're pretty excited about that news. I think it bodes well for the stock market for the rest of the
year.
And
it's definitely related to one other thing that's going on, and that is the high level of consumer confidence and small business confidence and some large business confidence. That means people are expecting the economy to improve. They're expecting their sales to improve. They're expecting to make more money. Therefore, they're going to stick their necks out and hire some people.
Yeah, in fact, this quarter is the first time in quite a few quarters where more companies have been increasing their guidance, their forward-looking forecasts. Mm-hmm. They've been saying that, yeah, things are getting better, instead of saying, no, I don't think it's going to get better. I think it's going to get worse.
Over the past 8 years, we've all gotten a little bit complacent. The terms like new normal are coming into our lexicon. And the new normal, it does not have to be normal. Normal could be where we were 10, 20 years ago, but we have been stepped on, squashed, inhibited, whatever, by heavy taxation and by regulation that just keeps things from getting done. And the new administration is attacking it head on, despite all the complaints you hear anywhere. This administration is going to be very business friendly, and the elected people better figure that out pretty soon. So far, baby steps. Hope it keeps going.
Yep, me too.
All right. The Trump plan.
The Trump plan. Yeah. This week, in case you missed it, the healthcare plan that was defeated just a couple weeks ago in Congress reemerged and was voted on in a little bit different form and actually passed in the House. So now it's going to make its way over to the Senate, where most likely it will be tweaked, changed. Who knows what exactly the final bill will look like. But the plan that the House passed is called the American Healthcare Act. It passed by a vote and it needs a simple majority in the Senate to be approved. Actually, I think you can just get 50 votes because the tiebreaker would definitely vote for it. So if we get 50 votes in the Senate, it will pass. Details of the plan are pretty sketchy, as it was, I don't want to say hastily thrown together, but that might be the best term.
It's basically a guideline, an outline of a bill to come or whatever.
Yeah, they say this is the first of three bills that would have to go through to repeal and replace Obamacare. So I looked at a bunch of websites, both conservative and liberal, to get an idea of what was actually in the plan or what is actually known. And here's what we know so far. This is really interesting. The House did not exempt themselves from this bill. That means that members of Congress might actually be subject to what they subject us to, which is
Don't think that's going to make a difference, you're not understanding very much what the Congress does as individuals and then the collective.
Exactly. Normally what they do is they'll pass a bill that's good for us normal people and then exempt themselves and put themselves on a much better plan. So that did not happen in this bill, which that makes me feel a little bit better about it, actually.
I think that's where I originally learned the term boilerplate, because every bill Congress passed had this boilerplate, several paragraphs, that if you read all the way through it, it exempted certain classes of people. And if you read that carefully, it would be congressmen, senators, president, vice president, and all of their aides.
Mm-hmm.
Gee, thanks a bunch.
Yeah, good enough for us, but not good enough for you.
Newt got rid of that once when it came back. But I digress.
So the new bill would also abolish the individual mandate, which requires those that don't want or can't afford health care insurance to pay a penalty on their taxes for not being insured. So can we just get a yay for that?
Yes, for me you can.
That
yay.
Is the worst piece of legislation I can remember ever seeing, to put a tax on someone or a penalty, whatever you want to call it, for not doing something that they don't want to do.
Exactly.
It makes no sense.
It's not. I know Sarah's listening. It's not who we are.
Exactly. I can understand taxing someone for something they do want to do and are willing to pay for, but to tax someone for something they're not willing to do makes no sense to me.
And the only way they got that past the Supreme Court was to use doublespeak.
Pretty much. So the new bill also rolls back the employer mandate, which has led to employers cutting workers' hours on more than one occasion. You've probably heard about this, the part-time, all the part-time jobs that were full-time jobs directly related to the employer mandate under Obamacare. The new bill also delays the medical device tax, along with several other taxes set to kick in under Obamacare, so it hasn't repealed them yet. That must be in a later version, or one of the next two bills that are going to pass, but right now they're delayed.
There is probably an underlying reason that makes some sense. I have not found it.
I don't know either. It must be something political or technical. So it also replaces the Obamacare subsidy system with a tax credit system starting at $2,000 and going up to $14,000 for a family. These credits are age-based and top out at certain income levels. So they're not income-based until you reach, I think, $150,000 as a family of income, but they're age-based instead. So a lot of the criticism comes from the fact that older people would end up paying more for their healthcare insurance than younger people, which kind of makes sense because they're going to be the people using it. But it is a big criticism of
5% of Americans use 50% of the cost of healthcare in this country. Now, if you can't price them somewhat accordingly, at least, then you're going to have, I know, Obamacare did the same thing. I'll talk about this right after the break. We've got to run. Don't go anywhere. Call us right after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back. Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Things are growing out there despite the chill. Actually, they're probably growing faster, because it's comfortable. We still have trivia question open. In the past 10 years, how many companies from the 500 that made up the S&P 500 back then have disappeared from sight and therefore from the index? It's a number greater than 50. All right, we've got to wrap up a couple things here, and we'll remind you again, lines are open, 222-8255. 904 is the area code. Give us a call. We'll talk about anything you'd like. So, wrapping up a little further?
Yeah, I had a few more points. The new bill, it also doubles the amount you can contribute annually to a healthcare savings account.
That's huge, folks. It's absolutely huge.
Great, but I wish they had also made healthcare savings accounts available to more people. And hopefully that's coming.
I do too.
Because right now, it's unless you have an employer plan, it's kind of tough to get one.
It is.
So,
I agree.
That should be something that is available to many more people. It's a great savings tool. We could do a whole show on healthcare savings accounts. But
that's absolutely true.
Maybe we will in the future.
And I don't like the age limit on them either.
Yeah, I agree. That's
65 is ridiculous.
It is.
A lot of people work well past 65.
Right.
I'm one of them.
Well, not to mention the full retirement age for my generation.
Exactly.
For Social Security is not 65.
No.
So
they haven't even indexed it up a year.
Right.
This is ridiculous.
So the new bill also mandates that younger people pay does not mandate that younger people pay the same amount as older people for healthcare, which I mentioned earlier. So in fact, older Americans could potentially pay 5 times as much for their insurance as their younger counterparts. That is largely, again, I go back to some of the biggest complaints about this bill. That is the one you're going to hear the most about. It's discriminatory towards old people, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're going to hear that a lot.
Adam and I were comparing that to something during the break that a lot of you, if you've been around Florida long enough, will remember. Back in the Charlie Crist as governor days, he decided that the system of insuring your property was unfair. So he drew lines. And whenever a politician draws lines, this is not good. He decreed that everything east of I-95, the property owners should all be taxed this, or all priced the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens when you get off of I-95 and go east a little bit? Your property value isn't that high because it's next to I-95. What happens when you go in a little bit further, however, across the ditch, and it starts to get a little more pricey, and then every block you go east, it gets a little more pricey until you cross that last street, and then it becomes astronomical, and all those people had to be treated the same. What resulted?
Everyone got on Citizens because all those insurers left the state.
Yeah, and Citizens was supposed to be the avenue of last resort, and it became the largest insurer in the state. And you know who Citizens is? You.
The government.
You. Me. This is wrong. Private insurance is much, much more reliable. So what happened when he was gone and they changed it back was that insurers started to flock back into the state of Florida, and you now have choice. This is exactly what we're dealing with now in the whole Trump era, and I think it's going to get improved, but it hasn't been improved enough yet as far as I'm concerned. So older people now are allowed to be charged three times what younger people are. Under this plan, it goes up to five times, and then there's those ones that are very hard to insure, and they're going to go back to what they were doing before, high-risk pools, state by state. This makes a lot of sense, folks, a lot of sense.
So Medicaid also got some changes under this bill. Everyone who's currently on Medicaid would be grandfathered into the system until 2020. But going forward, the bill changes how money is distributed under the Medicaid program by state. Everything is run at the state level. Funding is based on state population, and it's increased annually at a rate of medical inflation. So not just inflation, but medical inflation.
Which has historically been.
Yeah. So essentially, Medicaid would be on a budget instead of being an open enrollment program. So states are going to really have to consider how they spend those Medicaid dollars under this new bill.
Hmm.
There are several popular parts of Obamacare that will be continued, including pre-existing conditions. If you
there was
are
a guy
continuously
on Fox
insured.
This morning directly lying about that.
Well, so there's a catch to this, which I kind of like, actually, the way that they handled it. So if you are continuously insured, there's no problems.
Right.
If you take a break in your insurance and get sick, then the year that you go and get insurance, you can still get insurance, but you will have to pay a 30% premium increase for 1 year to cover some of that added cost of insuring you. So it's actually kind of a good thing because it discourages people from taking a break on their healthcare insurance to save money, because when they come back, they know it's going to cost them an extra 30% to get the coverage.
When you don't have a relationship between price and value, the market doesn't work.
Exactly.
Bad value has to be repriced.
Right, exactly.
Lack of value has to be repriced.
So, and the other popular thing that's going to remain is that children can remain on their parents' insurance until they're 26. And that's been.
Which was immensely popular.
Obamacare. Yeah.
And therefore, you don't take a simple provision like that if you're going to really change a system. You don't start by doing it with things that are intensely popular. Probably the two most popular things about Obamacare were pre-existing conditions and having the kids at 26 with a, I don't think even so distant, third, no lifetime maximums.
Right.
We got hung up on that a long, long time ago where they'd have a lifetime maximum of $1 million. I have personal experience in that. In a company I owned way back when, one of the employees' son was hit while he was riding a bicycle, and he was in a coma for a long time, and his costs were starting to really rise, but he wasn't brain dead, so they kept thinking he's going to come back, and wound up getting up to where this minimum was going to apply, and they had no means to do anything else. So we went out and shopped insurance to try to get a new one in where the new million would actually apply, and we were uninsurable by anybody else because of the ongoing expenses of taking care of this kid. And that is just flat out wrong.
It is.
You have to be more flexible than that. So Obamacare did those three things that I think most people just flat out agree with. Okay, now you've got to change. You've got to change a system, but you have to do it within restraints. There are always restraints, whether they're budgetary or practical or whatever, and that's what they're going through now.
Yeah,
so just a little aside.
So, as I mentioned, the thing I really like about this, though, is you shouldn't be able to just not carry insurance all your life, and then the day you get sick, go sign up for insurance.
No, that's
wrong.
That crosses, erases, whatever, violates one of the precepts of insurance.
Exactly. Insurance is there for when you need it,
exactly.
And you hope you never need it, but you should pay for it just in case you do. You shouldn't be able to just skirt by without paying anything and then get all the benefits.
And on the other hand, everybody knows someone has been affected positively by that. We have a case right now of a friend's child, and this one would be really bad if it weren't insurable. But you can argue the reason he wasn't insured was because he knew he could buy it if he needed it, and he was young, didn't think he'd need it. I would argue that that system has a flaw in it. And what you've just talked about is it's making a requirement for people to at least consider being continuously insured. And I think that level of personal responsibility is far from too much to ask of anybody.
Absolutely. You have to at least think about it. That's what we're asking. Mm-hmm. So
it's going to be an interesting struggle as we try to accomplish all the goals of this thing, because some of those goals are very expensive. Somebody's got to pay. Any legislator who says something about we're going to pay for it, I have an automatic problem with that, because they don't pay for about, what, this year it's looking more like $1 trillion worth of stuff already. So if you're going to add on some costs and you want it paid for, how about we don't add any costs and pay for that way and get closer to a balanced budget? But that's how complex these things are. In fact, you probably heard when Trump said, this healthcare thing is really complicated, more so than I knew, more so than most people know. The complexity of this thing is so huge that it's not going to get done overnight. And he's absolutely right. Between the health care, the health insurance, and the taxation and the budget, you've got a lot of moving parts in this thing, and they're not going to come together easily. But I do congratulate all of them on a darn good start, I think.
Yeah, there's nothing in this bill that would lead me to believe it's going to implode the system.
No. All right, after the break, we're going to tell you a little bit about who we are, and then we're going to go into another topic. And don't go anywhere. The lines are open, 222-8255. Keep listening. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And once again, welcome to all the people coming into town, because this next week is the big one around here. Remember that if you're headed out to the beach on any of the routes, especially on 210, be prepared for spending a little time.
Yeah, Butler won't be much better.
And no, not a whole bunch. All right, let's see, where were we? Wrapping up a couple of things. Kentucky Derby Day, weather up there is not nice, so if your favorite horse is a mutter, good luck. And the other thing that you should watch this weekend is the election in France, where Marchand and Le Pen are somewhat unknowns to the actual office. They know more about Le Pen than they do about Marchand. The market wants Marchand. He's up 24, I think, in the last poll. It'll be interesting to see if they can pull off an upset like that. If it does happen, she's going to push for Frexit, the French version of Brexit, and the market will not like that very much in the short run. They're going to love it if Marchand wins, so I'm predicting that that will happen, and this week could start out really nicely based on that.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. A lot of comparisons between Le Pen and Trump.
Yeah, and it's kind of strange because he's about 50% him and about 50% her.
Mm-hmm.
But depending on what your topic is, it's going to be interesting. It looks like he's going to be pretty much of a shoo-in. Never know.
Anyways, so We talked a lot about the healthcare bill today, and you may be wondering why on a finance show we're bringing up healthcare. Well, you may not realize this if you're in your younger years, but as you age, healthcare expenses are probably going to be some of your biggest expenses. Once you pay off the house, retire, get everything, your cars are paid for, you still have a big bill facing you. On average, a couple retiring last year will spend $260,000 on healthcare costs in retirement. So if you're wondering if healthcare affects your finances, it absolutely does.
Yeah, figure out sometime how much you earn and how much you have saved and see if that makes a dent in it.
Yeah, and also we sit across from a lot of people at our table in our office that want to retire early. And the single biggest thing that keeps them from doing so is the cost of healthcare insurance. So it's a big deal.
Speaking of sitting across the table at our office, if anyone would like to do that, you all know by now, I assume, that the first hour consultation is absolutely free. We will not bug you afterwards. You will definitely learn something if you come and see us. And you never know. You just might find out that our version of what we do fits your lifestyle very well.
Yeah, and if you want to come see us, you can always call us in the office at 904-685-1505, or even easier, just go onto our website, which is www.vanweefinancial.com, and you can book a meeting with us right from there. It'll look at our schedule, see what's open, and you can fill in your information, and boom, you've got a meeting.
Magic.
It's pretty nice. That's actually, most of our clients are now using it, and most of our new clients or potential clients are using it as well. So it's a really nifty system.
It is indeed. And for those of you who do get onto the website, look around it a little bit. We blog a couple of times a week on average, some of it what we talked about during the show and others not. We have some links to some good people and that sort of thing. And all in all, I always give Adam full credit where it's due here. It's a beautiful site, and he has worked very hard to make it so. So try it. And I look at a lot of financial people's sites, and ours is best.
No bias.
No. Well, you know, I'm not paid to be unbiased about everything.
That's true. It is our show.
We can it is be our show. All right. Hand in hand in D.C. with the healthcare thing is tax talk. There are a group of people who really believe, I guess, up there, I guess you'd call them the naive among them, that they can, A, lower taxes, which I'm all for, and B, simplify taxes, which I'm, again, all for. But tax simplification, given what we've got, is a myth. It cannot be done, and I'll give you a few reasons why. But let's start with this. There was a real bright guy a few years ago. His name was Albert Einstein. And he said, quote, "The hardest thing in the world is to understand the income tax. And if he can't understand it, who could?" Arthur Godfrey said something that I really like. "I am proud to be paying taxes in the United States. The only thing is, I could be just as proud for half the money." Like that. And then there was Lyndon Johnson. In 1790, the nation which had fought a revolution against taxation without representation discovered that some of its citizens weren't much happier about taxation with representation. All three spot on, in my opinion. Having recently passed April 15th, which was actually April 18th this year, so it's still kind of on our minds, although a lot of people are trying very hard to put it out of your mind, not much. My particular situation is that I don't file till October, so it's always on my mind. But anyway, I want to address a little bit about what the Republicans are telling us about tax cuts and tax simplification. They are saying that they can simplify the existing code or do a form of the flat tax, which would certainly be an improvement, but not as much improvement as you might think. All those proposals have one thing in common. They are intensely complicated. Why, you might ask, is a flat tax complicated? Here's how much I made. Here's a percentage of it. Here's my check. The rest is for me. Sounds easy, doesn't it? But what that number is, the top number there, how much I made, what is the definition of how much I made? gross income, business income? Does it count Social Security? Does it count anything like that? They misunderstand the development of the tax filing itself, in my opinion, and they're trying to simplify it by calling everybody or most everybody the same, and it can't be done. So I looked at a Form 1040 EZ, which is the form that people use when they have the really most simple tax returns that you can use.
There aren't that many people that actually use it.
Actually, 13% of filers.
Right.
That's all it is, yep, that use the 1040 EZ. Now, the 1040 has quite a bit of information on it, including wages, salaries and tips, and taxable interest, that sort of thing. So it is a page long, but there's also a second page explaining how to fill out the first page, which is the complication with a whole bunch of taxes. So are you going to get that on a postcard? I kind of don't think you're going to get that on a postcard because the print would be so small, most of us couldn't read it. All right, let's say you got a simple tax form. You have a job, you get a W-2, just like that. So you're going to go to the 1040 EZ, and you'll file it, and that's fine. That makes you a 13 percenter. But who can't use it? Well, here are some conditions that a good share of you are not going to be able to qualify. Is one or more of you 65 years old or older? Oh, no 1040 EZ for you. Do you claim any dependents? In other words, do you have any kids? No 1040 EZ for you. What if you're pretty successful and you have taxable income over $100,000? Nope, no EZ for you. If you claim any tax credit except the earned income tax credit, which is what they call a refundable tax credit, that it is for low-earning people that give you money back that you didn't actually earn. You know, goes back to Ronald Reagan, and it's probably here to stay. But if you claim any other tax credit, energy credits, or anything else that you can think of, no easy form for you. You claim premium tax credits or pay advanced premium tax credits, and that has to do with premiums in states that have actual taxes on them. Not really a big worry in Florida, but no 1040 easy for you folks. If you had other than wages, salaries, or tips, now this is where it gets complicated. If you earn money that you do not get on a W-2 or a simple 1099, you're probably not going to be able to use the EZ. So let's take the smallest business person in the world, a single. That single will spend a lot of time and a lot of money trying to figure out what the bottom line is on his or her tax return. Then you can translate that number over to the top of your little form. But I'll go into a little more complexity about the whole thing next week. But suffice it to say that the preparation of taxation or taxes is largely, almost completely, a process of determining how much money you actually made. And we'll get into the complicated way that's done. Next week, we're running out of time. In the past 10 years, 129 companies that used to be in the S&P 500 have gone out of existence and therefore out of the index. Mergers, acquisitions, and other fun things that change life all the time. Keep it interesting. I don't know where it went, but it went. So we have to go. We'll see you next week. Same time. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.